Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Our home, it's meant to be your sanctuary, and it certainly is mine. It's safe, a comforting space to retreat when the world gets tough, a space that's filled with your memories and memorabilia that you've gathered over a lifetime if you've stayed in the same place. So when you reach an age when others try and force you out of your home, maybe into some sort of aged care facility, it can be devastating. I can't imagine how devastating that might be. And not just on a personal level, there are also significant broader ramifications, not least on the healthcare system. I'm wondering, is there a better way? And are policymakers looking for better ways to improve this situation? Economist Francis Gray, housing strategist Andrea Sharam, and Managing Director of the Longevity Group, Derek Cafferty, are here today, and we together are going to investigate what needs to change if we want to give Australians the choice of growing old at home, which I'm sure all of us would choose if we were in control of that situation. Hello, you three.
Good morning, Miff. How are you?
Good. Francis, how is the population of people aged 65 and over in Australia projected to grow over the next few decades? And what does this mean for aged housing?
Well, Miff, it's projected to grow significantly, but I think the key part of your question there is decades. It's actually going to hit us in the next 10 years because the baby boomers are leading that wave. And if you're 70 now, most people will look at a nursing home in the period of 80 and above. So 10 years from now, we start to see that baby boomer wave coming through, and already under 80 is coming through. So the system's not actually engaged now in this particular issue. And so that wrenching effect that you've described is gearing up. And that's not to say that hasn't been bad in the past. It's bad for every individual has to confront it. It's just that in the next 10 years, the numbers of people confronting that are going to rise dramatically.
Oh, and what affordable housing options are currently existing for those who want to stay at home and be cared for by family rather than have to be wrenched out of their home at a time when it's become obvious that it's necessary? What options are available for those who want to stay at home now?
Speaking as an economist and someone who's lived through the experience of having elderly people need alternative accommodation, I would say the short answer to that is there's nothing available, and that's pretty brutal. There's obviously little things available, but there is nothing that the average person out there listening to this program is going to be able to find when they need it. They're trapped in their three-bedroom brick veneers, or they've got the nursing home on the other side, and in between is an ocean of pain.
Derek or Andrea, would you agree or disagree with that statement?
If there are a range of alternatives for people, I understand where Francis is coming from, but there are things like retirement villages, there are aged care facilities, there are facilities where people have care at a lower level that are available now. But even when we start talking about the demographics, if you look at the number of retirement villages in the country, if they were to double over the next 10 years, they wouldn't have enough to take up the capacity of the people who are getting into the age group to require alternative living. And as it stands now, retirement villages have between a 5 and 6 percentage penetration rate in the over 65 market in Australia.
But of course, most of those options exist for people who can afford to pay for them. So people who already own their homes outright do have some degree of choice about where they go. But if you're a renter, and increasingly Australian population are becoming renters, long-term renters, I mean, about a quarter of Australians are now in rental, as the tenure not of choice. Mm. As they age, they are going to put enormous strain, strain on the aged care system because people who are in rental and who have periods of insecure housing and, dare say, homelessness age much faster. So they need aged care. much earlier in their lives, and they'll have much more need for medical services, you know, from really from their 50s onwards.
Yeah, Andrea, you are an expert on housing policy and economics, particularly with respect to disabled people. This morphs, as you know, into issues around ageing as well. We see lots of efforts at group housing in Australia for people with disability. And is this a trend happening in ageing, for ageing folk, because no one can find anything in between?
Well, what was called group housing for people living with disability, that's been a quite traditional form of housing, of care for them. And in fact, the system's moving away from that. It's seen as not really delivering people's rights, although some people do want it. And there is a new market being enabled by the NDIS, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, that's funding people to get that form of housing which is attached to the care. In terms of, you know, older people who are looking for aged housing, as a distinct from care, there is interest in it, but it's not really occurring on any scale. So we have some smaller groups really driven by younger people who are locked out of the aspiration for home ownership, who are going to organisations like Nightingale Housing here in Melbourne, or you know, joining syndicates and getting together with groups of friends in order to become the developer of their own apartments. So there is some, you know, light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, no, I would jump in there too quickly, Miff. So the first part of you mentioned group housing. So if you mention group housing to your average mum and dad out there, we're going to share this house with another family, they'd run away screaming.
Totally. We spend our lives trying to and not to have to live with other people. And then when we get older, all of a sudden we're going to be, we are thrust into living again with other people. I mean, that could be great, or it might not be your choice.
Well, exactly. And in the answer to your previous question, I said, well, for practical purposes, there aren't any choices for people. And Derek quite rightly pointed out the mechanisms that are there. The research that we have seen shows that people are loath to share. They want to find their own style, their own space, whether they're disabled people or elderly people. Derek's company has a particular approach, which I think is brilliant and has huge hope for the future to respect the rights of people to live in their own space and to guide their own future. And that's one of the questions here that you see in the existing system for elderly people, is this presumption that you're just going to walk away from a lifetime of being an individual.
Yeah.
Rolling Stones is very appropriate at this time. You know,
you don't
this
want
generation
to.
Is not going to do that. It's not happening. And the system will have to bend to cope with that. And hopefully the lessons from disabled living might actually apply here, might be applied. Yeah.
Sorry,
I was just going to say, Miff, on top of that, and people are often made to feel guilty, older people, to say, well, we're staying in our house, and you see articles in the paper saying, you know, there's one old lady living in it, rattling around in a big house.
That she won't give it up for the young folks to buy.
She won't give it up for the younger generation.
Why would she?
Why should she? She's built and contributed to that community for many years.
Yeah.
Why are we saying now that older people don't have a place in the community that they've helped establish?
Absolutely. Frances Gray, Andrea Sharam and Derek Cafferty are with me, and we're talking about housing for the aged and the options that are available these days. Derek, your group, the Longevity Group, was mentioned. What is it that you do?
Well, I mean, we basically, for years, we'd owned retirement living and aged care, and we were looking at it, and because we'd seen that there's only about a 6% penetration rate of retirement living into the over 65s market, we started to think, well, what is there? Is there an alternative product that we can develop that might appeal to even a percentage of the other 94%? And we spent some time doing research with people that had came and looked at our villages and not bought. And we wanted to know, well, we identified, well, they obviously have identified that they need to move, that they want to, but it's not attractive to them. And we thought, well, if we could see if there are some common themes occurring with people and we can address the common concerns and themes that they have, maybe we can put a product on the market which is going to be attractive. And one of the things that was very important to people was staying connected to their local community and living in the area that they've lived for many years. And so we knew that, well, we've got to start looking at projects within the suburbs that people identify with. And they've got to be close to hospitals, got to be close to public transport, and got to be close to shopping where that's sort of like vital to people's lives. And we then said, well, we really want to build things which are, instead of having to have features retrofitted into the design later in life, where we've all seen houses where there's a disability ramp that goes 3/4 of the way around the house so that people can get access. Well, what if we built them without any lips or any ridges throughout the house? What if we built doorways wider from the beginning and made bathrooms bigger and kitchens more spacious and had doors that are easy to open and lights that are easy to switch on, and they're designed in from the beginning so that they look
so it doesn't look like you've made all these additions and it doesn't look institutional, and
so that's what we do.
Is your product attractive to you, Derek? Would you live in it?
Well, I'm right in the demographic, you know. I've turned 60 recently, so I'd be at the start. You know, you're talking about Mick before. Well, Mick's 75 now. He's well advanced, but the younger boomers are now in the 60s too. So I look at it and think, well, once you get to a point where you want to downsize, and when we speak to people, they don't want to downsize their living space. They want get away from maintenance, and they want to perhaps reduce their garden and manage it, and they want to enjoy the golden years of their lives. So yeah, we want to be able to give people an attractive living option and which they can basically lock up and leave and enjoy the other pursuits in life while they still can.
Yeah, we're talking about...
So, yes, the answer to that is, would I live in one of the places that we built? Absolutely.
I think it's a yes, and we're giving a pamphlet to Mick Jagger as we speak. Yes. Now, we're talking about...
I've brought you a couple of brochures.
Thank you. I'm not too far away either.
Yes, no, I'm very disappointed about that.
No, I'm not far. Now, we are talking about options if you want to stay home when you get older. There's quite a few messages coming through on the text line, and I'll go through a couple of them and you can answer them as you see fit or where your expertise fits. The first one is, what is your proposal for someone without any super savings or their own home, says Simon?
Well, it's a terrible situation, basically. You know, I've done a lot of work around women from midlife and above, and it's a very dire picture, you know, because it's a very fast-growing cohort who live in insecure housing and really have no prospect of having secure housing as they age. The current system for aged care, providers, for-profit providers are supposed to take a certain number of people mm-hmm. who perhaps have only got the pension, but people find it very difficult to find a nursing home that will actually take them. So they're in an acutely difficult position, which does result in, an increasing level of homelessness amongst aged people.
And what can we do to help to fix this problem, because it will increase?
Well, the key thing for people who don't have that asset being their home, which of course has attracted, considerable tax benefits for those people over the decades, is to have a strong social housing sector, investment into community housing in diverse places for diverse groups. So, the social sector has been saying this for a very, very long time, and we're at this point of a crisis, because we have the least amount of social housing in our history. It's only about 4% of housing nationally, and the need is something like at least 20% of households need it.
Is this a problem you think that will be solved only by government and policy, or is there more that we can do?
Look, it's primarily a governmental responsibility. I mean, the subsidies governments put into housing, to home ownership, are huge. Many, many, many billions of dollars a year. Really, what we've been looking for is for those subsidies to shift into the social housing sector where they can do the most benefit. So you get the most gain out of those dollars, taxpayers' dollars that are being spent.
In Finland, MIF, I believe they passed a law 10 years ago which made it a requirement that every person in Finland is entitled to a house as an act of government policy, to try and reverse this trend that we've seen in the developed economies of increasing homelessness on the streets. It is a trend, and it's a direct function of the macroeconomic management policies of our governments who have basically sliced and diced the funding for social housing for 30 years and gone, oh, why isn't it working? We seem to have only one acorn left in our chest. Well, yes, that's because you need more acorns to do the job. And we as a society need to face up to that. And for people that you've just described, it's ridiculous to think that they're going to be able to find funding at certain ages for property. But if you had a social housing policy combined with the sorts of smaller properties that, say, Derek has in mind, suddenly you're starting to see solutions that pop up everywhere. And that's coming from the public sector trying to look at how housing issues.
Yeah, what's been the result of that policy in Finland? Does that mean that there are fewer homeless people and happier older people?
I believe that is exactly the case, and that it's actually worked very successfully to such an extent that I believe the UK has actually picked up the policy now and is considering implementing a similar policy that everyone is entitled to a house as a basic principle of social justice.
I've got a text message here that you might be able to get your heads around. I recently saw an ideal private dwelling for sale with 10 potential bedrooms and 4 bathrooms, walking distance to shops and transport. It was a former medical centre. Why don't governments buy these places and convert to rental accommodation for older women, says Diana.
Well, maybe I can impart answer that, Miff. Really, there are many planning-related issues that would come into play there, and also the actual building, the way it's constructed itself. If there are regulations which have to be met in order for a dwelling to be, in order for a building to be converted into a dwelling, and you know there are fire regulations, there are a whole range of issues that would need to be looked at, and it may end up that medical centre would be better off being demolished and rebuilt as purpose-built housing rather than trying to convert a building from something that wasn't designed for in the original in its original construction.
That's a point, but that regulation keeps coming up in all of these conversations. Yeah. They are obviously hurdles. I know in some states in Australia, building what was traditionally known as a granny flat is proving to be difficult because of government regulations, whereas it's different in other states. So do we need some sort of universal, or at least an Australian approach to this issue that allows all of us to age with dignity and in a way that we choose?
Well, I think there's a few points there, if I might jump in, Miff. Firstly, if you own a block of land in Australia, or in Victoria, and let's talk about metropolitan Melbourne, and you want to build a single dwelling on it, you have, providing you comply with res code, you can pretty much build anything that you like and to any design that you want. The minute you go more than one dwelling on one block, you open up a whole range of planning requirements that you have to meet, and also you open it up to local objections. And really, I think if we're going to have a sensible conversation about medium density housing for older Australians, then we need to look at some planning exemptions and some planning relief to in order that to take place, because otherwise it's a long, long process.
Yeah.
And we've had projects underway through the planning process that take up to 3 years to complete. Through the planning process, that's not constructing them.
And if I'd jump in there as from an economist's perspective, basically this market appears to me to be constipated and broken. And you've got private entrepreneurs like Derek's company and others who want to respond to what is an obvious demand to anybody who thinks about it for 2 seconds, and then they run into the planning process. And the ridiculous it's not ridiculous. These are legacies of another time. Hmm. And the world has changed, and now we want housing in a whole range of scales and types, and we haven't even gone to configurations or planning yet in that sense. And it's time that the planning system was overhauled to reflect that, and that would help to have national leadership from a government that actually cared about providing housing for Australians, and that needs to be driven through. The trouble is that the people facing the elderly ageing crisis and housing crisis are on their own, and the people making decisions are all very happy in their jobs, and they don't have to live in that bubble, basically. So there's a huge disconnect, and until your listeners actually put on the tweets and start saying something, that part's not going to change. And I would add on top of that financially, the financial systems that we have in place to support elderly people in ageing are also a major barrier to allowing them to reshuffle their assets to meet their changing circumstances as they age. So even if all the buildings are out there, at this point in time, the financial system that underlies it blocks a transfer.
So really what you're suggesting, Francis, and I'm sure Andrea and Derek agree, is an overhaul, a complete overhaul in the way we look at how we grow old comfortably in our own homes, and a completely new system. It's going to be quite impossible to, I imagine, install in Australian policy in a short period of time. So what do we do now?
I'm an optimist, Miff. This is a voting block with incredible power.
True.
And the pain that they go through in the process of their elderly people ageing and themselves ageing, and most of the people in this age group have already seen it happen to others in their family, just project it forward, say, this is what's going to happen to me. When you talk to a politician next, make sure they know what you think about this particular topic, because I think this voting bloc has the power to make this change and to get the policies reset so that there's something here for everyone. And in the process, we might affect the homeless crisis, and we might solve housing for disabled people, because they're all, in some senses, expressions of the same underlying structural problem.
One final text before we have to wind up. Kate has written, I work with the aged care population. The government also provide very generous funding to assist people to stay at home. My aged care fund packages to contribute towards home modifications, equipment and services. Yes, there are waiting lists, but it can make an incredible difference to families. This kind of care living, how much of an option is it? Are the waiting lists terribly long?
The waiting lists are huge. I agree with her on the point that it's available and it's incredibly valuable and useful, except it's not incredibly generous. And that's the issue. And these old houses sometimes need way more work than these can provide. And also the care packages are not sufficiently funded. However, if you can, the other models that are out there for, say, smaller housing and on-institute care, et cetera, you could think about new ways of doing this as well.
I mean, if you can picture a bathroom, a standard bathroom in an old house, which may have a separate toilet and may have a small shower that fits one person, and envisage trying to change and bathe somebody and toilet somebody in that space, it's very difficult. There are a lot of issues for the person that's being bathed in terms of dignity and privacy, and there's health and safety related issues in terms for the care provider and the person who's providing that care. And really, you need a wholesale rebuild of that bathroom. And what we, from our point of view, were saying, well, if right from the get-go, bathrooms are designed with that in mind.
Yes,
it'll be, and long run, it'll be cheaper, because it'll be easier to perform the work.
That's safer to perform the work. We've got to go to news, sadly. I'm going to have to wind you up there, but it's been wonderful to talk to you all today, and thank you for sharing your views. It seems we've got a lot of work to do. Francis Gray there, economist and sessional academic RMIT Uni. Andrea Shiram, senior lecturer in the School of Property, Construction and Project Management at RMIT. And also Derek Cafferty, managing director of the Longevity Group Australia.